Judiciary Committee will again come to order. Senator Latz has, I'm going to get his bill number here any second now. Senate File 392. And I understand you have an author's amendment.
I do, Madam Chair, the A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment. Senator Latz.
I move the A1 amendment as an author's amendment.
All right. The motion is to move the A1 amendment. Senator Latz. Oh, you want to vote on that now?
I'd like to put on the author's amendment.
I'm sorry, my brain. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you. Madam Chair, the bill comes before you today to modify the limitations of actions for damages based on services or construction to improve real property. At the initiative of the architects in Minnesota, the engineers, the builders, and the contractors, and the Mechanical Contractors Association, and it has to do with the statute of limitations and sort of a quirk in the law that can have the effect of causing that statute of limitations to be longer than was originally intended. And so for the details on that, I'm going to ask the witnesses that are accompanying me to explain that to the committee. I have with me Mike Lapicola, who's an attorney at Fagry Baker Daniels, and Eric West, who's an architect and legislative co-chair for AIA Minnesota. So I ask if Mr. Lapicola could please explain the specifics of this bill.
Madam Chairman, members.
Yes.
My name is Mike Lapicola. I am an attorney at Fagry Baker Daniels. I'm a construction lawyer, and I'm here on behalf of the American Institute of Architects of Minnesota, the AIA Minnesota. So Minnesota, with all causes, legal causes of action, of course, private legal causes of action, there are statutes of limitations that determine how long you have after you are injured or discover an injury before you within which you have to bring a claim. And then there are statutes of repose, which is the maximum time period that you have to bring a claim, regardless of whether or not you are aware of an injury. And so Minnesota Statute 541-051 is the statute that contains the statute of limitations and repose with respect to all claims, or most claims, arising out of construction defects and design defects. And that statute has been in existence in one form or another since 1965. It's been changed a few times, but the basic gist of the time period now is that if a party is injured by a construction or design defect, either personal injury or property damage, they have the statute of limitations is they have 2 years from the date of discovering the defect or the injury to bring the claim. And the statute of repose is they can't bring the claim after 10 years from completion of the project. That 10-year period can be extended to 12 years if they discover the defect in year 9 or 10. And up until 2007, those same time periods applied to contribution and indemnity claims. So if one defendant is sued for a defect, that defendant can bring a contribution or indemnity claim against other defendants who also share responsibility. And that same 2-year period of limitations and 10-year or 12-year max period of repose also applied until 2007 to contribution and indemnity claims. But in 2007, the legislature made a change to the law to deal with a timing problem, and that was that the defendant could be sued at the end of the 10 years and then may not have enough time within that 10-year period to bring in the other defendants who were potentially responsible. And so the change that was made in order to resolve that, the legislature eliminated the statute of repose for contribution and indemnity claims. And the unintended consequence of that is that now architects, engineers, contractors, subcontractors, suppliers are all subject to potential claims for contribution and indemnity indefinitely, forever. So the American Institute of Architects and the engineers, the ACEC, got together a couple of years ago when we identified this problem and crafted the legislation before the committee. And we met with the builders and the mechanical contractors and the subcontractors and the home builders to make sure that everybody was on the same page, and everybody was. We ran it by various members of the construction section of the bar to make sure that they were okay with it. We ran it by the trial lawyers to make sure that the trial lawyers wouldn't oppose it, and the trial lawyers indicated that they didn't have a problem with it because it doesn't affect claims by plaintiffs, it affects the way that defendants divvy up the damages. And so we're not aware of any organization that that opposes this. The bill itself creates a 14-year period of repose for contribution and indemnity claims. And the reason why it's 14 years is because the direct claim can be up to 12 years, and that still gives everybody 2 years to figure out, which other defendants are potentially responsible to bring the claim. We think that that's a fair statutory system. We think it's consistent with what other jurisdictions do, and it provides a maximum amount of time so that eventually professionals who build or design projects can go about their lives without the threat of indefinite lawsuits. Thank you.
Mr. Lapicole, I guess I have a question for you. Are you saying this has no effect on homeowners who are claiming problems with their, with their builders, the warranty claims that come through? This is not going to change what they go through at all. It's not going to make it more difficult for them or for them to give them more time for all the defendants in an action, warranty action, to get all their lawyers together and delay any kind of court case or whatever, mediation, whatever it may turn out to be. This has no effect on homeowners?
Madam Chair, no effect whatsoever. It does not affect the time periods at all that a homeowner has to bring a claim.
Thank you. Any questions, members? Thank you, Mr. Lapicola.
Sure.
Now you have Mr. West, is it?
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Eric West. I am an architect, and I sit on the AIA Government Affairs Committee. I'm the co-chair. And this indefinite liability to when an architect or an engineer signs drawings, they take on a personal liability that design is correct and safe. And because we're taking on that liability, we also buy insurance. When an engineer and architect retires, they can buy insurance for an additional 5 years after they've retired. After that point, we can't buy insurance for the so you're forced with either not retiring or so that you can maintain insurance or just being exposed. And that makes retirement difficult. It makes transferring the ownership of the firms from one generation to the next more difficult. It also makes our documentation process, after indefinite time, we have to make sure we have indefinite documentation, and that begins to pile up, and the principal players retire. It makes it more difficult to defend, and that's why the statute of repose was in place until 2007 and is a common practice around the country. And we appreciate you listening to this issue for us tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Weston. Please remember to sign in on the sheet there for the record. Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, I've also been informed that Legal Aid has reviewed the bill, and they are fine with it, and that the Insurance Federation also takes no position on the bill.
Wow. Senator Latz, looks like you've got a bill everybody likes.
I may have achieved that. I hope it's not the first time this week that happens.
Thank you, Senator.
That's wishful thinking, isn't it?
Are there any questions from members? Senator Hall?
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, I do see Senator Ortman walking in. Did you get that resolved with Senator Ortman, some questions she had?
I see Senator Ortman giving me a thumbs up from the back of the room. It appears that we have.
Okay, good.
Senator Latz
moves. Chair, I move that Senate File 392 be recommended to pass.
It goes to the Senate floor.
As amended.
Yes. All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The bill, Senate File 392, goes to the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
What about my questions?
Quick second. I'm going to make a couple of announcements about committee scheduling.
Did you want me to make those, Mr. Chair?
I'll go ahead.
Okay.
One change I want to make to what's on the notes. Okay, members, we will next meet on Thursday. Reminder, it's at noon for the first meeting and at 6 p.m. for the second meeting. Thursday and Friday are the gun bills, or I should say bills aimed at addressing issues of gun violence.
Pardon the pun. Aimed at.
Yeah. Aimed at. That was not intended. But. I guess come prepared. For that, Friday will be at noon, and we've scheduled it until 6 on Friday. You know, if it gets done earlier than that, that's fine, but we've got the time in the room set aside for that. All of the hearings relating to these matters will be ticketed, just so that we can control the access to the room, because we expect there to be a lot of people interested in participating. So people who have bills that will be before the committee will be given tickets so they can attend and their testifiers can attend. We will have strict time limits for each bill that's being presented, equal time limits for each side, and we will adhere to those limits. The proponents and opponents can divvy up their time any way that they wish to, as long as they fit within those time limits. We will not take any action on any of the bills Thursday or Friday, we will anticipate Thursday evening will be more of the public testimony portion and not tied to any specific bills or proposals other than those that are on the agenda somewhere for consideration, but it'll be more free-flowing in that regard. We will have overflow rooms with broadcasting the hearing in the Capitol here, so for people who can't get into the room, they will still be able to see what and hear what's going on. And then we will return again on Friday.
Mr. Chair, are we starting the gun bills at noon on Thursday?
Noon on Thursday.
Okay, we're starting those bills at noon.
And that's so, correct.
Thank you.
We're doing everything we can to give everyone an opportunity to have their proposals heard before the committee, so we can have an open and transparent process, and then we'll see, you know, down the road. I'm anticipating that at some point within a week or two after that, I'll make a chairman's recommendation as to what I think ought to happen, and then the committee will take up those proposals for specific consideration and action. We will not take testimony on any proposals for assault weapons bans or high-capacity magazine bans. There are not any, I don't think there are even any bills introduced in the Senate at this point that propose that. And since we're not going to be considering those issues, there's no point in taking testimony on them. So I will remind people who come to testify of that as well, but just so you already know ahead of time, anyone who decides to testify on those topics, I will at first gently remind them that it's not under consideration by the committee. And we're going to stick to the bills that have been identified, topics that have been identified from bills that either have been introduced or we know they're on their way. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, from the emails that I've received, I'm concerned that there are an awful lot of people that believe you are hearing bills related to gun bans and ammunition bans. And anything that you can do or your staff can do to send that message out early and often would be appreciated, because I think there's a very big misunderstanding about what's being considered before the committee now that you've made some decisions about what you want to hear and what you don't. And I always think it's been said, I make this mistake all the time, I've said it and I think people have heard it, you can say it 10 times, and there are still going to be a lot of people who come on Thursday respectfully and think that we're going to hear bans on assault weapons and ammunition. So anything you can do and your staff can do, message what we are going to hear, I think that would be appreciated by all.
Thank you, Senator. I did issue a press release yesterday to that effect. It was in the Star Tribune and the Pioneer Press on that topic. And
I believe Channel 4 or 5 had it this morning at 11.
And I know I've been doing a number of other press pieces yet today to that effect. It's being posted as part of our committee posting that we will not be taking testimony on those topics as well. So we will do everything that we can to notify people. So if that's the issue that's motivating them to come to the Capitol, they don't need to come to the Capitol unless they want to participate in other topics that will be before the committee.
Great. Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, I'll do what I can, at least for the citizens that have contacted us, given us advice on how to vote on this. I'll get to my list, too, and give a signal out to them that we're not going to be taking up assault rifle issues or magazine capacities. And we could do that in our
caucus.
We could give that reference to our caucuses, and perhaps the whole caucus could put that out.
Yeah.
That's a good suggestion. We'll pass that along to our caucus as well. Good suggestion.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I think that there are some advocacy groups that have sounded the alarm, and rightly or wrongly, and it would help if we can find some way to get those advocacy groups to send out their subsequent messages explaining what is happening at the Capitol and what's not happening at the Capitol. Mm-hmm. And I'll do what I can, and I know we all will do what we can to send that message out.
Thank you. It is my goal to keep the hearing on a professional, analytical level and not to let people's emotions get the better of them. I know it's a topic of high emotional content. I know that the members of the committee will be able to avoid stoking the flames, but I'm just so you know, we'll make every effort to control the testifiers to the extent we have any control over anything to try to keep that tamp down a bit so we can just work on it analytically. Any other suggestions or thoughts?
Just a thought. Will we be asking questions to the testifiers, or is that something you just want to try to get through the testimony without questions?
Have we scheduled time in there for questions?
Okay. We'll have 20 minutes with each bill for questions.
Okay, separate from the scheduled proponents
and
opponents' testimony.
You could think they could be up at the table and come back, or however you think would be.
Yeah, okay. Yes, there will be an opportunity for us to ask questions as well, and clarify and so on. And we'll have the bills before us, I mean, the content of the bills for us to look at and so on. We're just not going to take any action on it. We're not going to formally take them up for consideration.
Okay.
Anything further? All right. Thank you. We are adjourned.